Hello, and welcome to Wilderness Medicine Updates, the podcast for medical providers at the edges. I'm your host, Patrick Fink. Today, we're going to talk about fentanyl. It's January, which means that people are out on the ski hill, they're getting hurt, and ski patrollers need to help them out. And we have a paper from Wilderness and Environmental Medicine on intranasal fentanyl as administered by ski patrollers, which is relevant not only to them, but to anyone who's trying to get some better pain control out in the wilderness. But first, today's episode is brought to you by nobody yet. That's right, this show runs on my time and energy alone. And if you'd like to support the show, I'll tell you how after we get to the goods. So, today we're talking about an article in Wilderness Environmental Medicine that was published in 2022. This is by Tiara Lynch et al. Big props for publishing this paper as a Bachelor of Arts, no doubt in medical school. The paper is entitled Intranasal Fentanyl for On-the-Hill Analgesia by Ski Patrol. Now, intranasal fentanyl is a fantastic medication. If you're not giving medications intranasally, then you are missing out on an opportunity to avoid needles and just give medications by a really effective and easy route. There are a lot of studies out there that have shown equal safety and efficacy of intranasal fentanyl with intramuscular and IV morphine, fentanyl, sufentanyl, etc. The upside is that you avoid the needles and you don't need to access the patient's arm or their thigh. You don't have to expose their arm for an IV, which can be fiddly and difficult, particularly in a cold environment. Now, who can administer narcotics is a tricky proposition. If you've seen one EMS system, you've seen one EMS system. Internationally, the authors highlight that in New Zealand and Germany, there are protocols that let paramedic-level providers give intranasal fentanyl with online medical control. In the United States, ski patrols are like EMS systems. If you've seen one patrol, you've seen one patrol. Some are staffed almost entirely by EMTs and paramedics. Others are just outdoor emergency care certifications that are similar to kind of a first aid approach. Intranasal fentanyl is potentially super useful in this setting, but how can we get that into the hands of providers? Well, in this study, they were at Taos Ski Area, and there they have patrollers who are certified as EMTs, and they applied to the New Mexico Emergency Medical Services Board to get a special protocol that let EMT basics undergo a training and be able to give intranasal fentanyl on the hill under the direction of a physician. What are the methods? This is a retrospective health records review. They looked at records that were collected by patrollers after administering these medications that were compiled by the base clinic. And they looked at period from 2007 to 2012 and 2016 to 2020. That period from 2013 to 2015, the records were misplaced when the clinic moved to a new location. Whoops. They included patients who were seen for acute painful orthopedic injuries and who received intranasal fentanyl out on the hill as outlined by their special skills protocol. And it's worth looking at this protocol for a second and as to who they're giving these medications to. So they come up on someone who's twisted their knee or suffered a significant traumatic injury on the hill, and they're just asking them, scale of 1 to 10, how bad is your pain? And a pain level of 7 or greater, they consider severe pain and rules them in for possible fentanyl. If they decide that they want to give that patient fentanyl, they're calling their online medical control, who's a physician who's available over the radio, and they're reviewing the patient's sex, age, weight, and using a standardized dose chart. They always have naloxone available, and they drop their fentanyl in a 3-mL syringe, look up the patient's nose to make sure it's not too bloody or mucousy, and then they fire a 0.5 milliliter of the medication into each nair at a time. It's worth taking a little break at this point and talking about intranasal medications overall. So if you haven't used these before, what you need to make this possible is a nasal atomizer. It's basically a foam cone that goes on the end of a syringe that lets you dock that syringe into the patient's nose. And when you squeeze the syringe, it turns that medication into a fine mist. Things that are important to know about intranasal medications is, one, most importantly, there's a limit to how much you can put up the nose before it starts coming out of the nose, running down the back of the throat. And generally speaking, in an adult patient, that's about a 0.5 milliliter per nair. So you can give up to 1 milliliter of medication. Most fentanyl is 50 micrograms per milliliter, which means that you can give a maximum effectively of about 50 micrograms at a time, putting a half milliliter up each nair. Now, you can get up to, 100 micrograms in there if you're putting a half mil up one nair, half mil up another nair, wait a minute, give another half mil, but it's hard to know exactly how much you're getting and how much is going down the throat. And it's also worth noting that in this study, their standard dose chart says if you're 68 kilos or better, which is going to be most adult patients, you're getting 100 micrograms of fentanyl. So you're getting 2 milliliters of fentanyl up your nose. The last thing to know about intranasal medications is that the most common atomizer, the MAD atomizer, no affiliation, eats up 1/10 of a milliliter of your medication. So when you're drawing up these medications, if you just drew up 2 milliliters of fentanyl and you sprayed it up the nose, just doing some back of the napkin math here, I think you're only getting, 80 micrograms of fentanyl up the nose because it's eating 0.1 milligrams, maybe 90.
Wrong, 95.
Point is, you're not getting the full dose. So to get a full dose of the medication, you're going to need to draw up an extra 1/10 of a milliliter. So that's 2.1 milliliters of fentanyl. And the paper doesn't discuss this, but most fentanyl comes in vials of 2 milliliters, so I'm not sure how exactly they're getting that dose of 100 micrograms of fentanyl. Maybe they're cracking open a second vial. All right, back to the study. They use a standard dose range. They get permission from a supervising physician, and then they're going to administer this fentanyl, and they squirt it up the patient's nose on each side. And then right at the initial time point, and then at 5, 10, and 15 minutes, they're supposed to ask the patient, how's your pain now? Scale of 1 to 10, and record that. Not surprisingly, there were some missing time points because realistically, you're going to squirt some medication up that patient's nose, try to get them in a toboggan, and try to get them to the base clinic. So while they're skiing down the hill, you're probably going to miss some time points. So how did this perform? Well, they managed to include 247 patients. Of those, data were incomplete from 28 patients, missing some medication doses or pain scores at some time points. So they use this multi-level modeling to try to impute missing time points. But I think, 28 out of 247 patients, that's actually pretty good in terms of what medication doses and pain levels they were able to record. The patients that they treated ranged from 6 to 74 years old, typical kind of ski population, with 59% of patients identifying themselves as male. The initial pain score was 8.6 plus or minus 1.5, which means that initial pain score, yes, could have gone almost to 11. So they looked at their decrease in pain scores from 0 minutes, and at 5, 10, and 15 minutes respectively, they saw minus 1.8, minus 2.4, and minus 2.9 on those pain scores, and that was significant at all time points. Importantly, from a safety perspective, there were no adverse events like respiratory depression or the need to use naloxone. They did look at their compliance with their protocol and evaluated their kind of standard dose, and they say that few patients received higher or lower doses than they ought to, 10 and 15 respectively. So, about 10% of their patients are getting a slightly different dose than they're supposed to. And there was no statistical difference in the pain scores with respect to that weight-based dosing. So if you got 100 micrograms and you're 68 kilos, you didn't have a different pain score than the person who is 23 to 44 kilos and only gets 50 micrograms of fentanyl. Of the 200-some patients included in the study, 17 patients got additional fentanyl doses and 8 patients received additional IM morphine. So what do they take away from this study? They found that fentanyl was safe and efficacious on the hill. I don't think we can argue with that. There is significant pain decrease observed in the patients that they're giving intranasal fentanyl to. Are there limitations to this? Yes. We'll talk about that in a minute. They did find things that were consistent with other studies, namely that if you had a higher pain score initially, you were more likely to have larger decreases in your reported pain. That's been reported in prior literature. And very infrequently did patients need intranasal fentanyl doses repeated or an additional IM morphine shot. Now, their protocol does not include specifically reevaluating the patient or any specific trigger for redosing. So it's hard for us to say why that is. It could be that once a toboggan's moving, you don't really want to stop and pull up more intranasal fentanyl. So your pain is what your pain is. Now, they note that, quote, challenges remain in achieving adequate analgesia using intranasal fentanyl. They note the problems with the volume into the nares. And note that they that in other studies, they divided doses bigger than 50 micrograms, as I was talking about. And they also note that vasoconstriction caused by cold environments can lead to decreased mucosal absorption. Basically, runny noses don't take medication as well. I do have some experience with intranasal fentanyl and analgesia on the ski hill. It's an area close to my heart, having started a narcotic program for the Snowbird Ski Resort. You've seen one patrol. At Snowbird, we have physicians on the hill every day, and so physicians are the ones who are administering these medications. And we've had limited experience with the intranasal fentanyl working well for us. And a lot of us have switched to using intramuscular fentanyl because it's more reliable because of that kind of runny nose effect and the uncertainty of larger doses running out of the nose. The authors do note that you can get fentanyl in different concentrations, like 300 or 1,000 micrograms per milliliter. There's some issues with that, namely cost. It's hard to find that stuff, and it also makes the possibility of accidental overdose much more likely. And then they also mentioned that there are more potent opioids like sufentanil, and we've looked at that as well. The problem with sufentanil is that the time of onset after you give it to someone up the nose is really, really fast. That works great, provided that they're a totally healthy person. But if they have anything else on board, they've had a couple beers, maybe they stopped at the ski smoke shack, there's a much greater potential for apnea. And that's not something we need in a minimally monitored ski patrol patient who's in a toboggan. Lastly, the main limitation that this study has is that there is no control, right? So they didn't compare to any kind of sham. They didn't compare to intramuscular or IV administration. And so we don't know whether the degree of improvement that we see is due just to the medication. There's a strong amount of magic that goes into the giving of any medication, particularly by a magical route like spraying it up someone's nose. And patients may also want to please us as providers. So I think if you've been in this situation before of giving people pain medication and asking how they're doing, you often get that sense that they want it to work. They want you to be happy with how it worked, even if it didn't work super well. So lacking a control group, we can't say whether the effect is due purely to the fentanyl alone. However, there's no arguing with the fact that at 10 and 15 minutes, that pain score is down by 2.4 and 2.9 points apiece. Those patients are still in pain, but they're happier than they were before. All right, in conclusion, Ms. Lynch et al. Showed us that in the right situation with EMTs on the hill and an appropriate protocol, you can safely administer intranasal fentanyl in a challenging environment, sparing people exposure to needles and exposing the patient to cold, and that this does reduce pain. How much of that is due to fentanyl or just the magic of our caring touch? We don't know, and there is ripe material here for a blinded trial or at least a side-by-side comparison with other routes of administration. Thanks to Lynch et al. For a great paper and for doing the legwork to develop, implement, and study this protocol. I think it's a growing trend in the United States to start delivering analgesia on the ski hill, recognizing that that is a service to the people who are injured on the hill, and it does facilitate things like packaging and transport and make ski patrol's life easier as well. So that's it for this first episode of Wilderness Medicine Updates. Thanks for diving in. Please, if you like what you hear and you want to support the podcast, give it a 5-star rating and review, and tell your friends, your wilderness medicine interest group, your fellow residents. If you want to hear more about a particular topic or want to hear about a particular study, reach out to me through email at wildernessmedicineupdates@gmail.com or at wildmedupdates on Twitter. That's all for now. Until next time, stay fit, stay focused, stay ready, and have fun.
Wilderness Medicine Updates is written, hosted, and produced by Patrick Fink, MD, all rights reserved. Our music is produced by Nathan Fink. Any information included on this podcast is for your education only and does not constitute medical advice and does not constitute any patient relationship between you, our listener, and any other producers, hosts, or guests of the podcast.